Welcome to the Top Advisor Marketing Podcast brought to you by Proudmouth. I'm your host, Matt Halloran. Being your own loud is not new to marketing, but the mindset, strategies, and resources to help you get there are evolving faster than this industry is keeping up. It is time to find a new perspective on what works, why, and how to move your business forward. Listen as I interview guests to help you learn from them how to be your own loud. Let's get to the show. Hello and welcome to another Top Advisor Marketing Podcast. I am your host, Matt Halloran. We are always talking on the show, mostly in the subtext of what we're doing, about how important it is for you as a financial services professional to unapologetically be yourself. Our guest today is going to talk about a way that you can really allow yourself to be you, build trust faster, and build a deeper relationships with people by saying something very simple, which is, I don't know. So Maggie is our guest today, and she's going to talk about The Power of Uncertainty, which is her book that she has. The book is called Uncertain, The Wisdom and Wonder of Being Unsure. And we're going to go ahead and dive into how you can implement this into your practice, your interpersonal interactions, and how it's going to not only help you build your business, but build trust. Maggie, welcome to the show.
Oh, great to be with you. Thank you.
Yeah, listen, did I get all of that right? Did I miss anything there? I already feel like I should be more unsure about what we're talking about today.
No, you were spot on. Uncertainty gives us incredibly exciting and unexpected gifts, such as how about courage? And then there's leg up in negotiation or persuading someone, better thinking skills, creativity, curiosity. It's a very maligned mindset. That is, being unsure is seen as weakness, and it's not. The new science of uncertainty really proves all of that wrong.
And we're going to run into some resistance. You and I talked about this when we were preparing for the show, because most people in financial services, as have been specifically trained, never to ask a question they don't know the answer to. And I want to start there. How do we combat this mindset, and how do we start getting people to shift their perspective on uncertainty?
Sure. I think it starts with understanding uncertainty. And this is a new science. As I mentioned, there's a lot of new research that shows exactly how it works in the brain. I'll just start by saying, we're really talking about psychological uncertainty, not the uncertainty or what we cannot know. I'm really talking about the mindset of being unsure, which is by definition, reaching the limits of your knowledge. It's not ignorance, but it's the idea that could be this, could be that. That's unsureness. You hit the traffic jam and then you really don't know and you grow uneasy. And so the first thing to know about uncertainty is it's really a spur to better thinking. It actually wakes us up because we're built to want and need answers. Of course, you're not going to linger in uncertainty forever, but you really, when you meet something new, again, the traffic jam or a memo or a client is threatening to quit or something like that, you actually get this kind of heart rate might go up, your palms might sweat. But at the same time, the new science shows us that your brain becomes more receptive to new information and you are actually gain focal attention. They call it curious eyes, which is exciting. And your working memory is bolstered. You're on your toes. And in one study of doctors, it found that in the stickiest situations when they were uncertain, that's when they began to look for resources to help themselves out. That's when their heightened attention was heightened. And so you can see that if you're retreating from or you're fearful of ever being unsure, you're actually squandering an opportunity to learn and investigate. So that's why uncertainty is now seen by scientists as good stress. And it's a really important part of thriving in this world of flux and change. And in one other study, I'll mention CEOs who are ambivalent in a crisis are actually turn out to be the ones who are more resourceful, inventive, and more inclusive. They look for ways to get new perspectives on the problem. Whereas the ones who are sure that they know the way turn out to do little or nothing at all. They basically cling to the status quo. That's powerful.
How do you communicate this level of uncertainty without losing the confidence of the client?
Yeah, that's really important. First of all, I think it's really important to own your uncertainty, to understand that it's not the disaster that you feel. And also, when it comes to social situations, there are really important and effective ways to be uncertain, and by that, being open to a problem. We don't have to announce that we're scared to death and really quivering in our boots and we don't know what to do, but actually, the positive side of uncertainty means you're open to the problem. You might want to keep the problem open. And if you look at the example of, let's look at Mars for a moment, this incredible studies of one of the most innovative teams in history, in space history, found that the people who put those rovers on Mars constantly tried to get people to air their opinions, different opinions, but also, I don't know. They were really, really very devoted, even though they were bonded and got along, to actually airing differences in order to unearth what they didn't know. That's how they move forward. And study after study shows that's how they were successful. It's really important to say, I don't know. 20% of their conversations during the first years of this mission were involved some kind of respectful conflict, I don't know. And then also, most of them involved expressions of uncertainty. And the second point that's really important here is that the word maybe, the word sometimes, those are called hedge words. They're not actually signs of weakness as we think. That's a myth. That's actually a myth. They're not actually used more by women, but studies out of Harvard show that executives who use the word maybe actually are seen as more professional and more effective, and they're seen as having better judgment. Because basically, again, look back to that point I made about inclusive. When you say maybe, you're inviting others to have an opinion too, rather than shutting down the problem, shutting down the conversation. Makes sense.
Okay, there's a lot you just said there. I'm sitting here thinking to myself, I've been in advisors' offices before, I've been in client meetings before, and just that natural resistance not to be able to have that answer on the spot. Let's talk about the studies just a little bit more about that interaction. So you have the expert, and I'm air quoting there, which is the financial advisor or really any sort of expertise person there. And they're sitting with a general lay person, right? And they're having the conversation. The lay person is asking the question to the expert. How can they go ahead and communicate, or how can they get more comfortable with what you're talking about? I just can feel my audience right now at ease saying, okay, I understand. Maggie, are there any sort of exercises, or are there any sorts of things that they can do to practice so that they can get more comfortable in this?
I think that, again, studies show that or innovative teams use something called the listening ritual. And often that's used at the end of a conversation. So if you invite your client to, for instance, express a different opinion or just any opinion, you end by listening. Maybe you start by listening, but if you end by listening and you're inviting other opinions, that's really important. That's shown to be very successful in terms of raising satisfaction and engagement. And I also think that you mentioned the word expert. That's really, it's really important for us to understand what kind of expert is the best expert. Because in our society, whether or not you're dealing with your client or just trying to figure out the problem in front of you, in our society, we very often think of the expert as that swaggering, all efficient person who comes up with the answer instantly. And actually, new studies of expertise show that's not the case. The people who you need to develop experience. You need to do that 10,000 hours. You want to have an opinion. Obviously, you don't want to be at a loss. But at the same time, experts who really operate in routine situations effectively often then can't move into new complex problems. Those are the kind of experts called routine experts who might dread the complicated client or who might really retreat when something gets ambiguous and just rush to an answer. The adaptive expert is shown to actually spend more time on a new, novel, complex problem than even newcomers do. They know how to inhabit the question. So that's the second pillar of uncertainty. It's wisdom. First, it's a spur. It wakes you up. Think of it as good stress. That'll change your whole outlook on the world. And then secondly, Think of it as a space of possibilities. That's what those CEOs did. That's what we can do as advisors. That's what you can do when you're figuring out a problem. You wade into the problem, and uncertainty gives you that space. I'm not talking about going to the mountaintop weeks of just sitting there thinking. I'm talking about proven studies that show surgeons in a crisis or CEOs just take a few minutes. Just take a minute, and then they're capabilities, the thinking gets better, et cetera.
I love the fact. In fact, the top advisors that we've worked with over the many years, one of the things that I used to hear as a consultant was, Matt, I'm just not really challenged much anymore. And I love the ending with listening, because that's when you can really truly hear. And Maggie, as we had talked preparing for the show, this show is really all about marketing. And how important it is to not only show that you're listening, but also show that you're learning new things. So in the studies and in your experience, since you're the author of this unbelievable book, what can you say to people who are trying to communicate this receptivity to learning new things and in living comfortably in this uncertainty? How could you communicate that in a marketing perspective, from a video perspective, from a podcasting perspective, but more importantly, when you're sitting there with a client, what can you do to show this level of receptivity and this comfort in uncertainty?
Yeah, sure. You can. I think it's really important to use those hedge words to say maybe sometimes, to invite their opinion. I think it's really important to, we can take a page from other work strategies that talk about arguing to win versus arguing to learn. We often think of a conversation sometimes, especially when it comes to maybe selling a product or it comes to convincing the client to do something. We often think that we have to emerge victoriously as the expert. If they sign on, then that's a victory. But maybe it's not that black and white. Maybe it's not that clear, and that's okay. I think when there's studies that show that people who argue to learn are the ones who are more inclusive. Again, we're talking about that again. And they're also able to allow pausing in conversation. That's a really powerful component. Actually, uncertainty itself is a pause, and it's not a weakness at all. But if you allow a pause in the conversation and then maybe say, I see your point, that's actually shown to be a more effective conversation. And that's really powerful. Whereas people who are afraid of uncertainty or who think that our arguing is only to win, actually wade into a pause and then try to edge out the other person or even say demeaning things or why can't you make up your mind or that kind of thing. And the opposite of the hedge words maybe sometimes are actually the words therefore or actually the word you're wrong. And so we want to steer away from those. If you're not going to look like it's very outdated, I would say, if we're clinging to certainty. Certainty is over. Certainty has not done us well as a society, as individuals. And, you know, to bring in the personal a little bit, I'm not a financial advisor or a coach. I deal with kind of persuasive conversations all the time as a reporter, trying to get big scientists and all sorts of famous people to talk to me all the time. And I would say that these strategies are really powerful. I find that the worst interviews I do are when I talk the most or when I don't allow us to pause, the person I'm interviewing or not. I find that's true in my personal life. This book has really changed how I deal with an upset daughter or a friend in need, and clients are in need. So what I do is now think, I don't have to wade in and fix the problem. I don't have to do that. I'm actually there with them. I'm inhabiting the question with them. And they and I come out the other end much further ahead. Because that's when you begin to see the third way, the unexpected way. And I'll tell you one other tiny little thing about pausing, just on the individual basis. If you're learning something new, maybe the new client has come in and poured out their story, take a pause. Because just doing nothing, literally, with your mind, instead of jumping to the next task, is shown to bolster your memory 25%. Next time you get on that call, you're going to remember who that client was a whole lot better. If you just shut the door after they leave and do nothing, I'm really stressing nothing. You're not even supposed to go over it in your mind. You're just supposed to do nothing. This is true even with patients with Alzheimer's. So wow, that's a powerful boost to memory. Pausing is where a tremendous cognitive activity is. So insert it into conversation and then practice it during your day. That's really important.
I can't tell you. So from a, being the main salesperson here at Proudmouth, saying I don't know and I'll get back to you is one of the best sales tools I've ever used in my life. And 99% of the time, it's entirely true. I don't know the answer to it, and I want to be able to get back to them. And it gives me another reason to reach back out. But it also, and does it put people more at ease? Do you, did in the research, when somebody used the words, by the way, maybe and sometimes are like compliance dream words that very few advisors use, because when you're trying to come across and creating content, when it has that level of certainty, compliance oversight doesn't love that level of certainty because they understand that the world's a little bit more gray. But when you are actually interacting with a person, whether it's virtually or in person, and you use these words, or when you're showing uncertainty, have they been able to track and research the level of ease or calm or comfort in the recipient of this uncertainty rather than the person who is the expert in the situation?
Yes. In other, to borrow from other professions, including psychologists, including medical practitioners, all sorts of different healthcare practitioners, which I think you can translate into advising. Basically, they have found, yes, that it's also another myth that the client, the patient, person in your office, it always wants certainty. No, it's actually, they can recognize that it's a tunnel vision way to operate. And yes, the studies show that the client is more satisfied. There's more engagement. There's more humanity. Those are my words, but there's just more comfort with someone who says, I don't know right now, but I'm going to look that up. Or I'm not sure, because that means we have different options instead of this way or the highway. I think that I'm underlining the opening up of multiple possibilities that uncertainty allows you. And I also think of uncertainty as a kind of honesty, because really, I started out talking about all of those physiological and mental changes, brain, neural changes that operate when we're uncertain. And there's a degree, your heart might not beat every time you're uncertain. But basically, when you're receptive to new information, that means you're more honest that the world can change. And uncertainty is really admitting that the world is unpredictable, dynamic, and mutable, and imperfect, and so are you. So don't you want to surf the change in the world rather than retreat from it or try to stop the change? We can't do it. We need to keep up with it. And that change is the other human being sitting across the table from
you. One of the things that my wife said, this might sound like a strange digression here, but one of the things that I had asked my wife when we first started dating, so why did you date me? I mean, there's way more attractive people, stronger, smarter, faster, all of that. And she said, because you seem to be the most adaptable. And when she's a biologist. And so those people who are able to go ahead and accept and embrace change and work with that change are actually how we've evolved, you know, as a species. And I think that is the next evolution. Maggie, I absolutely 100% agree with you. People don't want to be sold to anymore. They want to buy from you. And one of the best ways to do that is to allow them to come to that conclusion by asking the right questions and letting them figure it out somewhat on their own, of course, with some level of guidance. All right. So one of my favorite questions to ask, and I'm asking this of you earlier than I normally ask during the show, just because I've got so many things swimming around in my brain right now. What have I missed? And I know you've written a whole book on this, and everybody should be able to download the book, buy the book from you. We're going to have links in the show notes, but what am I missing? What should I be asking you I'm not asking you?
Oh, that's a good question. We've covered a lot of ground. I think that uncertainty is all around us, and there are many ways in which we can just basically recognize it. Uncertainty, maybe this is a little off left field for financial advising and for all sorts of different kinds of advising, but maybe it's not. Uncertainty is the good daydream, because that's a human capability to move within, to set sail, and to move into, daydreams are actually largely future oriented and they're planful. So I talked about taking room for a pause. You can also take room for a daydream, a kind of a thought experiment. And that's uncertainty in action. That's another form of uncertainty action. The other thing I think it's important, and I'm leaping a little bit over to the opposite of the daydream, is technology. One of the themes of my book, in percolating in the background, is how technology might be leading us, even scientists think, to be a little bit too certain. It's got lots and lots of pat answers. It's a device to go click and then you get a solution. And most of us take the first answer up when we're searching on Google. It's got its downsides because that's not how life operates. Life is the gray areas and the complexities. So I'd say maybe consider the degree to which you're wedded to your phone and all those sorts of good questions that people are already asking when we're thinking about how to harness the wisdom of uncertainty. Because I don't think we find enough uncertainty and expressions of uncertainty in our devices. And again, the studies really show that even searching online, you come off thinking no more than you do. And this is about thinking, what don't I know? That's where the future lies. We have, for hundreds of years in all of society, whatever job we do, have focused on what we know. But this whole uncertainty science, this mindset of uncertainty, opens up the frontier of what you don't know and how you can incrementally push into that instead of sticking on the little island of what you know, which leads to that kind of routine expertise. So this is about being alive. Alive to possibility.
You just said something, though, that I can actually, a big, not necessarily a flag, but you're actually talking about letting people understand and embrace a level of discomfort. And I think that's one of the reasons why people are so resistant to getting off of their little island of knowledge, because it is unknown and it's going to challenge their paradigms. Help me with that.
That's a great question. That I think it's really important to note that there's such a thing as tolerance of uncertainty, and that's basically a personality disposition. That's our comfort zone with not knowing, with uncertainty. And so that's gaining a lot of attention right now, because basically we're all somewhere on the spectrum of hating uncertainty or loving it, just as some people are more shy than others. It's not basically a fate, it's a tendency, and it can be changed. One way to actually get better at, again, the complex new client who's making you uncomfortable because you don't really know how to solve their problems, or the new kind of product out there that you can't get a grip on immediately and it makes you uneasy. One way to deal with that is to try simple, practical steps every day to try something new. And that sounds so simple. Actually, there are psychologists working with high schoolers in Ohio this summer to try to bolster their tolerance of uncertainty this spring. Their experiment's starting. And one of the exercises is to answer their phone without caller ID, something that young people actually find terrifying. So this is how simple it is. And another way to bolster your tolerance for uncertainty, keep sticking your toe in that water, is to actually try a new dish at a restaurant. And when I heard that, I thought, oh, come on, really? That's so easy. But then I thought, hey, I love to go to that same old bistro. I like to go and order the clam spaghetti. And hey, that's my comfy thing. That's my security blanket. And if you can do that a little bit, hey, order the other. My husband's really good at that, by the way. He'll order anything on the menu. He's so much more adventuresome. Then it bolsters your wading in to uncertainty and handling it and pushing the envelope of what you, it really works. And psychologists are now doing all sorts of interventions to treat all sorts of mental disorders just by bolstering tolerance of uncertainty. But the fact that it can raise resilience, wow, that's what we all need when times are rough.
All right. So the book, Uncertain, The Wisdom and Wonder of Being Unsure. Maggie, what's the best way for people to reach out to you to find out more about who you are and what you do and to purchase the book?
Sure. I'm on LinkedIn a lot, but you can also find reams of resources and all sorts of articles, as well as interviews with other podcasts with me on my website, maggie-jackson.com. That's Maggie-Jackson.com. You can find the book almost anywhere.
Okay. Is there a preferred location that you want? Because we're going to make sure that we have this in the show notes. So is there like a preferred vendor or something that you'd like
people to go to? I'd say either Amazon or Bookshop is for independent bookstores. Some people feel really strongly about that now. So I give them a choice.
Go to Bookshop, everybody. Support your local people. All right. So there's a couple of things as I wrap up the show today that I just want to really highlight. Many moons ago, there was a gentleman named George Kinder. He's still around. Actually, he's doing even bigger and better things than he was doing in this life planning thing. But his whole thing was this thing he referred to as the dramatic pause or the 5-second rule. And Maggie was just talking about that, like sitting in that silence and showing somebody that you've taken in what they have to say and you're giving it actual weight and consideration is so such a wonderful way to build a better relationship with people. And also, the brass tacks here, from a sales perspective, saying, I don't know, but I'd love to be able to follow up with you later, gives you an opportunity to have that second, third, or fourth touch that you need to go ahead and close that business. And by saying things like maybe and sometimes in your content is actually going to get it approved from a compliance perspective even faster. And it's going to build that relationship with your audience because it shows that you're willing and you're open to other solutions, which is what we need to do. We talk about the importance of listening when you're on social media instead of just talking at people. And I think that's what Maggie really hit on today. So Maggie, thank you very much for your brain. Thank you for your book. Thank you for everything that you're doing for people. And you are an absolutely fantastic guest on the show.
Thank you. It was my pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
All right, everybody, if you want to know more about who we are here at Proudmouth, go to proudmouth.com or go to the Pod Rocket Academy to find out how you can accelerate your influence. So for Maggie and all of us here at Proudmouth, this is Matt Halloran. We'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon. Thanks for listening to the Top Advisor Marketing Podcast brought to you by Proudmouth. If you want to know more about how you can be your own loud, visit us at proudmouth.com and sign up for the Pod Rocket Academy. Through courses and office hours led by professional podcast producers and digital marketers, you will learn everything you need to know to become the trusted subject matter expert you were meant to be.